What's up?
Hey, folks. Jerry here. Welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast, a show that explores the wipeouts, crackups, and recoveries of inspiring and influential people. Here you'll get the stories of the quest to find success beyond the struggle and the great leaps of innovation that take us there. People that sound like this.
JLD.
What's up,
Jerry?
What's up, man?
What's up, brother?
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Jerry. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fun today.
Keep telling your story as well.
Yeah, man.
What's up, Jerry?
What is up, my man?
How does it look, man? Is it on? I can't tell if it's grainy or not. Let me know how it looks.
Looks great.
All right, cool.
Today, we deep dive the life story of Rob Howes, who unraveled a miracle as a young man when his car was hijacked at gunpoint. All right, folks, strap in as we head into a tale about bumpy roads on the journey of life and course corrections.
Like, it gives you a link to share for the meeting, but then my guests click on it and they're like, I'm not in here. I don't know what's going on. I haven't figured it out yet.
That's all good, man. You know, the technical tornadoes.
Rob Howes, welcome to the Pioneers of Insight podcast. Glad to have you here.
Man, glad to be here, Jerry.
We ended up hooking up on LinkedIn, right? I think that's how it happened.
LinkedIn world, we connected on.
LinkedIn, and there's not everybody for this show, but I tend to reach out to people that have had, that are influencers, that have had some significant story, and then I wait to get a sense of the realness and the authenticity behind it before I sign somebody on. But we got turned on, I think, through a fellow colleague, and we had a chat, and I was like, this dude's got it. Yeah.
Appreciate being here, man. Thank you.
If I know from reading your profile that, you know, you're a founder, you got a number of business ventures out there, you're an uplifter and an inspirer, you're a coach, you're many things. So I'm interested in hearing how you see yourself showing up. And let me give you one thing that could help. Let's imagine that there's a carbon copy of Rob Howes and he lives with you. And he has the same consciousness, same awareness and everything. If he was to follow you around during the day, what would he see?
First thing I do when I wake up, I look at my wall where my vision is at. And although I don't have to look at it, I just look there because that's the direction and the habit that I built. And my vision is creating inspiring music and videos that empower people to live healthier, more prosperous lives. And I repeat that a couple times.
Creating inspiring music, videos that empower people.
Knock my push-ups off. I get about 100 in a day. Then I immediately put on my headphones and listen to something that's motivating, inspiring, moving in the direction I want to go. Because in the first 10 minutes of waking up, that's when your subconscious is most impressionable. Now I'm priming myself, getting ready for the day. Now, depending on what the day has before me, it'll either be continue to build out either the platforms that we have in place to help people lose weight, build a business, whatever it may be for that day. But working on my programs and products and whatever tools that, you know, the universe has given me in this season to help, you know, move people forward. And so that could look like a variety of things, but it's pretty much the same systematic flow. Wake up, gratitude, exercise, education, and then get it on the grind.
So I'm hearing a couple things with Rob Howes already. We're getting clear on your superpower early in the interview, and I'll be tracking it as we go on. You're a person that adds a lot of structure to stay on the track of what you're calling like on the empowerment side of things, right? The empowerpreneur. So you got a system in place that helps you stay connected. Part of that is affirmations. Part of that is routine. Part of that is exercise. So let's peel back the onion just a little bit more so we can go a little bit deeper. If I was to call your mom up, what would she say you do every day?
Yo, my mom's in Vegas and she's a lawyer. Mama doesn't really know what I do. I mean, she knows, but she doesn't have the intimate, like, inside look. My wife would probably have a better.
All right, what would your wife say?
What the heck would she say? Like, I'm going to say what she would say, but I'm like, would she say that?
Like, yeah, right, yeah.
I think she would say, you know, my husband's a hustler. You know, he's a provider. He's a hustling provider.
There you go, man. You see how much, so we can ring the bell of clarity. So we got it. Hustler and a provider. I hear a man that's pretty developed in terms of being connected to a sense of energy that can move him on his empowerpreneur journey. You got a system, you got a routine, you got not just a system that's a physical system, but you got a mental process in there too. Perhaps there's a spiritual one. I'll wait to hear about that. You also have enough going on in your life that the people that are observing what you're doing have a sense of what you're doing. It translates. You said your wife would see you as a hustler and a provider. That's part of the identity of empowerpreneur, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Where did this start to come up?
So right about 27 years old, I went into the ministry and became a licensed pastor. Started speaking all around the country. I started my nonprofit for kids, you know, helping kids get to college, lose weight, all that great stuff.
Hey man, I don't want to interrupt your flow, and I already am. I'm sorry about that. But there's a key piece of your identity that you're talking about. You stepped in as in the ministry. So you're 27, and that's a pretty heavy thing to get into the ministry. I'm curious, like, where did that identity come from? Was that part of your family picture? Or was that part of your youth journey? Where did that come in?
That came from when my wife and I were together. We decided either we're going to go to counseling, go to God, or get a divorce. So it was like one of the three.
Right.
Divorce was out. I was like, okay, counseling or God? I was like, huh? And what even God? Because I always follow God, but we needed some structure of God. That's what religion is the structure of finding right. your spirituality. So psychology or God? I was like, let's try God.
So what inspired you to the God part? Did you have mentorship in your early life that made that the more real possibility for you?
Well, I had my family members around me that were doing church that never really resonated with me. Uh-huh. But I encountered a supernatural situation right before I left high school to go into college. And I was shot and almost killed, literally in like the Matrix kind of thing. You know, so it was an experience that extracted me from this place where you're called Earth into the spiritual realm. Like, wow, yeah, that just happened. And there's more of this.
So we have a lot of people on our show that have these moments. We call them wake-up calls. How old are you? What's going on in your life? Who's in your life the day you get shot? And take us through the wake-up call.
Man, I'm 17 years old, just graduated high school, got accepted to Howard University, feeling good. Me and my friends, we typically, in Buffalo, New York, we get in the car, and we drive around, we drink our beer, and just hang out. You know, that's kind of what we do. And so it was a regular day as normal. And we were heading to the corner store to get the beer. I went in there, I got the beer. My boy Rob, who's my best friend, he's in the driver's seat, it's his car. I'm going in the store, as you know, typical day as usual. Come out the store, and I see somebody leaning over the passenger side window. I'm thinking it's just somebody from the neighborhood, regular guy, friend, talking to Rob. Rob's in the driver's seat. Come up to the car. Guy's not a friend. He turns around as a 380. I think it's a 380 pistol. Okay, super. And I remember looking, and he's like,
"Get in the car."
So, all right. I remember in that moment, everything stopped. Like life stopped. Everything stopped. I don't remember a whole lot that was happening at all for like a good, I don't know, 30 seconds. Next thing I knew, I was in the car. The shooter was in the passenger seat. My boy Rob was in the driver's seat. And I'm in the little section where you're supposed to have maybe the brake or your arm is supposed to go. That's where I am right now. And I'm sitting here like, okay. And I remember the guy, the shooter saying,
"Take off your rings and give me your wallet."
At that time, we wore a bunch of rings on our hand. That was like the thing back in the days, like skinny jeans is now. And so I remember taking all my rings off. And I remember just putting them down. I don't know where I put them. I just took it off. I remember everything moving slow. And this is the moment that I will never forget. And to this day, I don't know what the heck was wrong with this guy. So my boy's name is Rob. I'm Rob. We always joke, say, "We got Rob." So I'm like, he's looking at me. And he says,
"Let's get him."
Mind you, the shooter's right here. I'm here. Rob's there. Rob has this crazy look in his eye, like,
let's get him.
Why are you talking right now? Let's get him. I'm thinking to myself. And no, let's not get him. I remember, like, put my head down. Like, no, please stop. Stop. Like, stop it now. Gun's by my head. Say, okay. So, long story short, Rob tries to grab the gun. He tries to grab it. Now, remember, the shooter has the handle. Not a good idea. Rob grabs the gun. Excuse me, rewind. Before he grabs the gun, he takes a 40 bottle and he bangs it over the guy's head. The bottle bounces off his head, doesn't break. It hits the dashboard, and guess what it does? Boop, slow motion. Of course you know, it's slow motion time. As it's bouncing, Rob grabs for the gun. Clearly the shooter has a better grip on it, so he pulls back, steps outside the car, and leans in. Three shots. At this time, Rob and I both go back like the Matrix. I remember going back in the seat like, Shooter runs off. I look at Rob, he's screaming. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. The smoke clears, it's like it all clears. I got this sense of clarity. It was like some kind of, I became like a super surgeon rocket scientist type of. I remember, okay, got Rob off the seat, put him in the passenger seat, drove to the hospital, then I told him in the hospital, my boy got shot, drove to my house, told my dad, Rob's in the hospital. I think my friend Steve got shot too, because I left out of the story when the shooter shot at us. He turned around and shot at my friend too. All right, so I dropped him off. And I remember, like, dude, all this was happening. And by the end of the night, I realized I got shot in the arm. The bullet went in my arm, came out the other side, went into Rob's leg. So later, I'm holding at nighttime, when it's all over, I'm holding my Barry Sanders jersey up, which is bloody. And I'm looking at it, and there's holes in the front of my shirt. I'm holding it up thinking, like, why are there holes in the front of my shirt? Well, come to find out, when I got shot in the arm, when I went back, when I moved back in the Matrix style, the bullet went through my shirt and just missed my chest cavity. Just that little bit of air from me going back was enough for that bullet to miss. And I recognize all that. So yeah, that's, God got real at that time. Wow. Like, that's a moment where I remember standing there like I never looked at the world the way I looked at it. And of course I'm 17, so I got a lot of other thoughts going through, but that was the beginning of the awakening of me realizing that there was a much bigger picture.
You had to look back at that with the wisdom that you have now, and knowing that your light did go on, like, ooh, there is a higher power here. I see that. What do you think that moment was about for you?
Man, it's one word, and it's, well, two actually. Course correction. It's course correction, man. I believe we get these signs all the time. We get, whether or not we look at the signs and read them, like you see a sign that says 35 miles an hour, you can keep driving 50 if you want. But the signs are there, and that was a sign for me. And it was just a help of a course correction, because, you know, it only takes a slight adjustment, a slight degree to be on or off to put you in the wrong direction. Like, it takes 451 degrees to make fire, 450 degrees makes nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's just one degree of a change. And I believe my life has been about course corrections.
All right. So here you are in your low. You have a wake up call at a pretty early age. You're saying course correction. I hear just to get into Howard's not easy, right? So you're doing fairly well. I'm interested, what is the course correction? Why do you think you needed a course correction?
Because, you know, I have a lot of energy. I'm very determined, but I was very stubborn and very immature. And so you can have a lot of good energy. You can have a good intention, but if you're stubborn and immature, that mixture, it's not going to get you the outcome. It's like the wrong ingredients. Yeah, you got the idea for the pie, but you're putting pepper in it. It's not asking for pepper, okay? Unless you want a pepper pie. I wasn't looking for that.
You took us backwards a little bit to get And I asked you to go a little bit backwards, dig a bit deeper into this wake-up call moment. And you actually said the low was at around 27, where you started to get a true sense of your where you needed to go. And you mentioned that your wife and you were having some difficulties. And you're thinking, well, if I'm going to get back on track, I got some choices here. Psychology, or I'm going to go get back in touch with this higher power piece. And for you, that was back to, what was it?
Back to basically becoming a licensed, ordained pastor and speaking all over the country of youth groups, starting a nonprofit for kids and building out programs, television shows to help kids lose weight, get in shape, and just highlight. Just I went all in and pouring and giving back to the future, which is our kids. And I got focused on that tremendously for about 10 years. And our marriage began to change. Everything began to change. It was really good.
So this is helpful for the listener to hear. It's not always when things are going well, when we make these leaps of innovation, we're forced to look at life in new ways. You're 27, your marriage isn't going so well. You make a leap. And the leap for you is reconnecting maybe to that past experience. Like, where am I going to start to bring this in, that wake-up call? I hear you stepping into that. You're saying your life starts to improve. What were you leaping from? You know, where were you at in your life? Because there's also a leap in terms of the role that you're serving. What were you doing at that time before you went into the ministry?
Let's see. I've always been an entrepreneur, so it was something entrepreneurially, if that's a word. It was something. I had a moving company from like 22 to 26, my own moving company that I started with. And, you know, that was like an entrepreneurial thing. There was nothing that was really significant. That's why the nonprofit and going to ministry was primary, because I needed something. I needed something significant. I needed to be connected to. And when you get connected to a body, a church body, you automatically connected to influencers and folks who can help you go higher, because a rising tide lifts all ships. And so I wanted to get on that kind of plane for myself and my family. It was just time for the next chapter, man. It was time.
Well, this is kind of a deeper layer of the hustler, right? So maybe you were hustling to get by, but I'm hearing you searching for a deep connecting to a deeper sense of why as well. But also there's layers there that you're talking about. You're connecting to people that are also connected to a similar source, right? Maybe the way in which they influence is connected to a deeper sense of identity.
The crazy thing about it is, I'm not a pastor anymore. I still believe in Jesus Christ. I am still your global citizen.
Yeah.
I just don't necessarily practice 100% all the things that Christianity practices. Now, that's interesting, because I was a licensed pastor and I speak all over the world about Jesus Christ. But during my last couple years in the ministry, I just began, and over the years, I just saw some behaviors, and there was some different things that I was questioning. I had some thoughts. Like when I went to my pastor about, okay, the Bible's only 2,000 years old, but the world's millions, and some people say billions. What about the time before that? And no one would answer. No one would go further. It's like a little stopping point. It's like, boop, we're going to stop here. Boop, and everyone would do the same thing. And I would ask questions. That literally ejected me out of the ministry. I left church.
You're questioning. You're saying, so you got uncomfortable in your growth. So you're evolving as a person while you're in the ministry, as I hear. And your spiritual sense of identity is asking for you to grow. Mm-hmm. And maybe the people that are surrounding you are incapable of kind of meeting your need for that. So I hear discomfort and you're like, here I go. So there you are. You made your visit into the ministry. You said your low was basically having to find your way out of that struggle for the sake of your relationship, your marriage.
Kind of.
Okay, keep going then.
So that was a low. But that was like the low before the grow. Low, I didn't know much. So we realized what we had to do. So we began on this mountain together, climbing up to the top. You think about, she's on this side, I'm on that side, and we're both climbing to the top, reaching for God at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's working out great. And that was a good thing over the next decade plus. But after the questioning started coming in, a lot of stuff started happening. I turned 40. I hit this midlife critical crisis. It was just unbelievable. I started drinking. I never drank. I always drink beer, have some fun, but never drink habitually. Mm-hmm. It was like at the end of the day, I began drinking and drinking. And not like drunk like 60,000 beers, but a six pack had to be gotten after the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I found a six pack, then a couple little shots ago with the six pack. Mm-hmm. And I found myself in the back of the somewhere, I forget where it was, like waterfall, just I was going there every single day. And I was spiraling out of control because you gotta remember, I'm also in the ministry. Mm-hmm. So now I'm living two lives. Mm-hmm. I also run programs. So now...
Well, it makes sense. Let me slow you down real quick. It makes perfect sense because you're talking about a deeper spiritual hunger and you're still doing the routine of, I'm okay, everything's okay. But that deeper sense of spiritual longing isn't being resolved. And I hear this in people's addiction stories a lot. It's like when you're unable to address that stuff out loud and when you're unable to acknowledge the importance of your own need in your life, and you compartmentalize it, people start to reach out. And one of the ways people reach out is, well, I'll fill it with this. A substance is a pretty good way to do it. But you're saying you started to get habituated, right? Like, so addiction starting to come on basically is like you're in an early process of addiction.
Right.
But beneath that is this spiritual hunger. So you're in a trap. You're in a big trap.
I'm in a huge trap. And I can feel it because I know this. I know what's happening because I study it.
Right.
That even my whole life.
What are you saying to your wife at that time?
She doesn't know. Nobody knows but me.
Oh, man.
So it's just me. Yeah. And what happened was I remember like going into the liquor store. I remember grabbing something. I remember walking out and I saw one of my family's camp kids. Now, she's young. She with her dad or whatever. They're coming in to get something. And we're not, like, breaking any laws. There's nothing really big going on. But in here, something is. Because, number one, I don't want to really be there. Number two, now a kid that I teach shows up. And they don't even know. They're, like, just like, hey, God's right. Nothing clicked for them. Only me. And that's all need to happen. Because when I saw her, I remember I put the beer down. And I left. Hmm. I sat in my car. I said, God, you better show up. Crazy, man.
Hey, man, that's a real moment. You're making contact with a real moment. So you're saying this is also important because the first time was a loud voice, but this time it didn't take the loud voice. Yeah, you got a sense of your own betrayal. You were betraying yourself at the time. And I'm interested to hear what you did with that deeper need as you go forward. So you run into a reminder of the path that you're on, and it comes in the form of this young child and some people that you'd been familiar with. You have this, it's like the gong gets rung in your heart. Bong, like, no way, I'm doing this. I'm not doing this anymore. You get another shake up, right?
Yeah.
40 years old, you're at a developmental crisis, right? I hear this. You're like, I invested all my time and energy in being in the ministry, but it's not serving my spiritual needs anymore. Mm-hmm. You get caught up in this addiction process. So here you are at the edge of another crisis. Where'd you go from there?
I always go to music because music's my outlet. That's who I am as a core. I'm a musician, a creator. That's an artist. Mm-hmm. I went on a beat and I started writing a song. And the song's called I Need the Light. I was singing, I was writing the song down. And I remember praying and looking up. And I was in front of this boxing gym. I don't even know how I got there. So I went ahead and I said, you know what? This is your way out. I also boxed for like 6 years when I was younger. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to train for a fight. I've been 20 years out the ring. 20 years since I've been in the ring. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to sign up. I'm going to train for a fight. And I'm going to invite everybody that I know. And I'm going to record it. And I'm going to stream it live. This is going to force me to have to train because I'm not going to lose. Mm. And I know if I'm not going to lose, I'm going to have to train. I'm going to train. I'm not going to drink. Because it's how my mind is. Mm-hmm. So I basically was, the prize fight was me against alcohol. I wound up fighting a 20-year-old, matter of fact. Like that was like my beginning of coming out. And through that process of training, there's something that happens with exercise as well. Not just endorphins, but you get the blood flow into the hippocampus, right? Mm-hmm. And the hippocampus is where the focus is at. And your retention, the comprehension. And so all the exercise I was doing not only was cleansing me, but it was fueling my mind. So now I was in this state of high spirituality, and everything was just on 10x. And it was through that process I was able to realize my next step in the ministry, which was really stepping out for a second and begin to build myself back up. Like, build myself back up, build our family back up. And over those next 3 years, man, literally has just been an amazing journey. And this year, 2018, we marked, this is the pole we put into the ground that says this has been the best year of our lives.
So you started out by saying you're an uplifter and an empowerpreneur. It's hard for me to say for some reason. And then we went into different aspects of your story, right? We got into this place where we started to talk about your low. You started out at 27. You said early on in your relationship, which turned into a marriage, it was kind of struggling. So you're like, we need some direction. And then you took us back into your wake-up call, which happened much younger. So you were shot, right? And you had a wake-up call because there was a large miracle around your survival around that. So you're connected to the sense, deep sense of knowing that there's a higher power. I also heard that you're an achiever type, right? So at that point in your life, you may have been focused on achieving, but then you got connected to a much deeper sense of who you are and what you are. There's a core identity that was built in that moment.
Yeah.
So you go into the hustle a little bit. You're making it work. You're providing, but there was a deeper push to get back to the core identity around the struggle of your wife, right? So you jump into the ministry. Things are going great there. It sounds like you can really get in touch with the spirit of who you are. You kind of got lit on fire, but then there was a need for spiritual growth to expand, and your community was limited, right? So you put you in kind of a pressure cooker where you couldn't really find any relief for that deeper sense of need. So you start reaching out, you start drinking, right? So here comes your next crisis. The first time was a super loud wake-up call. The second time was a little whisper, and it came in the form of a girl, right? You ran into her and she's like, wake up. And you woke up, right? So you get back into the track. You're bringing health into the picture now, into your ministry. Your relationships are doing better. I know that's part of your work. It's not just about be healthy, be strong. It's also about being a whole human being. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason I was attracted to you. So things start to get easier in that transition, right? Where you allowed yourself to take a step outside of the traditional form of the ministry, and you brought the ministry to the world, and it was your interpretation of it. So I think I can hear in terms of the arc of your story where things started to transition from hard to easier, but can you break that down into practical steps for everybody here? Like, what were you doing?
It started getting easier when I had something else to commit to. Like, I was not committed to anything besides my own dysfunction. I was committed to that. I was committed to thinking about it. And, you know, I thank God for YouTube. You know, YouTube probably saved my life. I'm the kind of person, whatever I'm looking for, I'll look it up on YouTube. And I know the process. Look for the video with the most amount of views, right, in the shortest amount of time. And so it'll get right to what you're looking for. And I said, how do you beat depression? And it said, focus on what you're focusing on. So that was a help. And although it didn't change right then, in that store when I saw that girl, it then showed up. It's like, oh, when I got in the car and sat, focus on what you're focusing on. So I just changed my thoughts. I stopped thinking about the fact that, you know, we have more month than money. I stopped thinking about, you know, what I was going through in our relationship. I started thinking about what I wanted. I shift my focus from what I didn't have to what I wanted, scarcity to abundance. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, dude, that's what you teach. Yeah. How about you live it? But it's always harder to live what you teach.
Yeah, so that's why I'm asking you about this. This is super, super important. And I can even acknowledge this in my own entrepreneurial journey. You know, here I am a teacher, coach, and all this kind of stuff. But I'm telling you, and you know this as well, changing thoughts and focus is not simple when there's a crisis going on around you. Oh, God. So your story is telling me, though, that just the reminder of how important that truth is, mm-hmm. you know, and giving yourself permission to change focus just by with a message, change your thinking. The reminder is important, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
the reminder in keeping connected to people that are also on the pulse of that message as well. That's important for you, reconnecting, even if it's through YouTube or whatever.
Yep.
So here things start to get easier for you when you change your focus. You're not focusing on all the crap that's going wrong. You're focusing on what could go right, even if it's not going right at the moment. What does it look like? And you said your relationship started to get a little bit better. Do you mind talking about that a little bit? Like,
yeah,
for the listeners out there that are, they're managing the journey of success and happiness, that are managing the very challenging aspect of doing that with a partner. Mm-hmm. Where did that start to get easier and what did it look like?
Yeah, man. You know, the same flaw that was in my own life, in a personal, interpersonal life, it was happening in my relationship. I was focusing on the wrong thing. I was really being selfish because it's all about me. And that's what depression is. Depression is just basically focusing everything on you. This doesn't work. This doesn't feel good. I don't like this. It's something about you. The moment you remove you, it's like you can't see the picture when you're in the frame. So when you remove you from it, then you can look at it. And that's what happened with my marriage. I realized that, yeah, there's some things about my wife's personality that, you know, I don't necessarily love, but I'm contributing a lot to this. As a matter of fact, if I just listen to her more, that was the thing. Now, again, on YouTube, how do I have a better marriage with my wife? You know, listen to her. It's like, wow. That's the same answer you gave me when I asked how to have a better relationship with my kids. And so listen. And I started studying and listening more. Like, what is that? And listening is when someone's talking, you being able to repeat what they just said. And if you're focusing on doing that, you're not thinking about a response to what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So that's how you're doing such a great job. This is amazing, by the way. Greatest interview I've ever been a part of. Your listening skills. I feel like somebody's typing to you right now. From a teleprompter. You're like, and you're like, you read, like, how is he doing it? But you've mastered this listening skill, man. I say master, I'm sure you always want to get better, but you have a mastery around this thing. And that's what happened with us. I just started really listening to her. And once I started listening to her, I realized that the things that I'm trying to change about her is why I married her. I changed. My expectations changed. So I just expected them to change. She should change with them. Mm-hmm. Like, dang, dude, you suck. Mm-hmm. Like, I realized where I sucked at, man. You know, and it became a self-reflection every day process. And if you self-reflect every day, your course correction is going to be sharp.
You know, listening isn't about waiting for the other person to respond and then getting back on your track, right? Like, oh, you're done now, so I can finish saying what I needed to say. Right. Right. No, it's actually resonating, right? Like resonating with where they're at and emphasizing and all that stuff. But I also hear you saying it takes work. The self-reflection means, like, even after the conversations, you're reflecting on what you heard, yeah, so you can make the adjustments if you can. Like, I think that's the challenging part of any relationship. Yeah. You also got to be acknowledge what you can control and what you can't, but you will not be able to get an accurate picture if you're not listening well. All right. So we got how you show up. We got your low. We got a sense of where things started to get easier for you. And I'm going to take it just a little bit deeper. I think from hearing your story, things started to get easier for you when you gave yourself permission to be you. Meaning you used a container for a while, but you grew out of it. You weren't giving yourself permission for a long time. That creates a ton of suffering. Man, that's hard. And there's so many people in the working world that are doing that right now. Entrepreneurs, they at least have the gift of failing on their own time, right? Like, but most people are out there suffering quiet, you know, deaths, leading lives of desperation. So that's very valuable in your story too, just to hear that, like, life really did start to get easier when you gave yourself permission to let go of the crutches. You had some crutches and just said, I'm going to live it like I need to live it. And I'm going to address what I need to address to make the changes to make my relationships more meaningful in the process.
That's it.
All right. So where are you going, man? So now you're plugged in. You're an empowering uplifter. You're making videos. You're out there. You're teaching. You're not a person that's just like, hey, this is what I'm doing, and there's no meat behind it. Like, you're really doing stuff. Yeah. You do a lot of things. So where do you see yourself going with this new empowered Rob and family?
We're on a mission, man, to create 1 billion healthy, wealthy human doings. And I'm so on fire about it because it seems so possible. It's happening. And so my mission is to help people to make it, to simplify it, to wake them up faster. It's the awakening process, man. It doesn't matter where you're born at, what religion you're in, or you know, who your wife is, or what political party you're standing with. When you begin to awaken, and the mission is, we're talking about creating, my word is fit rich. You know, I say fit rich. It's mentally, physically, and spiritually overflowing. These three areas in life, meaning mentally, their perspective is good. They have a good psychology. They feel good about themselves. They self-reflect. They take time and they value their mind and their thoughts and their body. They're eating the right foods. You don't have to be a vegan or eat leaves off trees or never have, you know, an ice cream. But you just got to be conscious of what you're putting in your body, as well as medications, right? Being conscious of what's going in your body, as well as exercising, right? Movement. Again, you don't got to go to the gym 4 hours a day. I do 100 push-ups a day. That's what I do with some resistive band stuff. And this is my thing, right? That's it. And then spiritually, gratitude. To be spiritually rich, you just got to be grateful. It's not about religion again. It's about you being grateful, because gratitude opens the door for you to receive. Mm-hmm. You'll never receive anything from a higher power if you're ungrateful for what you have here on earth. Mm-hmm. It's like the monkey who's on the railroad tracks and he got his hand inside a jar trying to get the bananas. If he just take his hand, let go of the bananas, he can leave. But he wants the bananas, so he's just there. Here comes the train. But I got the bananas. Just let go of the bananas. I don't want to let go of the bananas. You know, it's the letting go process, as you were saying, allowing yourself to be you, being grateful for where you are. And that opens the door to see how to become mentally and physically rich. Like, it opens the door. The gratitude opens the door for everything else to come. So my job, my mission, is to create those people. And not through my videos or programs or products or services alone, but through relationships. You know, just through networking and sharing my story. And just sometimes just being the only Bible people will ever see is my life.
All right, man. I'm going to ask you the exit question. Do you have children?
I do. 3. RJ, Harmony, Melville.
Oh, awesome. All right. So let's say it's 30 years down the road. And you just cranked out like 100 push-ups. Right? Because you're still going. You're still going strong. You're sitting down. You're doing some self-reflecting. And your 3 kids come in the door. But they got your grandkids.
Oh, man.
And the grandkids all get together in a little huddle in front of you. And they're like, Grandpa, a lot of kids at the playground are talking about success. What do you think success is? What would you tell your grandchildren?
Oh, man, it's a question that's been asked over the ages. And I'm sure there's been millions of answers that have come out in the last 30 years. But honestly, success is about loving yourself and people. That's what it is, loving yourself and people. The reason I say love yourself, because if you don't love yourself, you don't have enough love for anyone else. But if you love yourself and then you focus on loving people, it's a loving world, man.
All right, folks, that's a wrap. If you enjoyed the episode, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. This just helps put it in the hands of the people likely to get something out of it. If you'd like to dig a little deeper and see what we got cooking here at TUI Media, you can visit our website at tuimedia.com. Wishing you grace to fill your sails today. Stay great in the meantime, and I'll see you on the next Pioneers of Insight.
Done. I just started really listening to her. Once I started listening to her, I realized where I sucked at, man. You know, and it became a self-reflection everyday process. And if you self-reflect every day, your course correction is going to be sharp.